Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swiger, your host, the guy that's completely clueless, but learns a lot from the three gentlemen that we do have on the program this week. We're going to start off. We have him back. It's been a while. I don't know if that's apple juice or what it is in his hand, but we'll just say it's apple juice for the family-friendly version of the show. Chris Forsman, how are you, Chris, from Ars Technica?
Cheers. I am once again sleepy. Here it is 5 a.m. But hey. Mm-hmm.
But we love you for it, Chris. We love you for it, mate.
And I love you back.
Spreading the love. It's spreading the love as always. Ewan Rankin, mm-hmm. How are you, Ewan?
Good, mate. All right. Not bad at all. Decent week.
Good week?
Yeah. Very good, actually. All right. Not too bad at all. I had a bit of an abortive Monday because I wanted to go down to the London Mac User Group event, but I had a very considerate client who didn't show up till 2 hours after he was supposed to be there. But I got paid for touching photos for the cricket club, so there we go. It's not all bad.
That's not all bad. And plus, it's a 200-mile drive for you, isn't it?
To London, yeah, it was a long way. Yeah. But I didn't mind. I wanted to go. It would have been cool. But we've got something in the pipeline maybe for next month. We'll see. It's all hush-hush though.
Sweet, sweet deal. Okay. On the down low. And last but not by all means least, Alex G. Fox. How's your week been, Alex?
Last by all means least. Thanks. It's been very good. until now. But no, it's been a good week, actually. I've done a couple of days of work and I've done a couple of days of being paid for not doing any work. And it's Friday. So
we like those days.
Couldn't get much better.
Bagel Barcast Friday, as always. Yeah, we got the Mac Show, of course, after this, and a very special thing that you and I are putting together, Ewan. But that's coming up later.
Relaunch the media show.
Yeah. We'll let everybody know a little bit more about that on the Mac program. But it's time for photo, and it's time for non-disclosure agreements and everything. Ewan's apparently, I don't know, is this hearsay? Why don't you tell us what you've done or not done this week?
No, I got iOS 5 on. The other day, registered as a dev and got the iOS 5, put it down on the iPad and put it on the phone, and I've got a couple of faults to send back to Apple saying, have you noticed?
You said you put it on the iPad. One thing I'm curious about there, how is iOS 5, that you got the first generation iPad, right?
Yeah.
How is it performing on there?
The one thing that's actually, I think they've dealt with is some of the kerning on the fonts, because it looks just a shade sharper than it did before. And I think that's true on the iPhone as well. I think they've dealt an awful lot better with the fonting on the system. There's a lot of things that are really, really nice. I mean, some of the notifications are beautiful now. You just get a little tiny thin bar appears. If you're doing anything else in another application, you don't get it interrupting and coming across the front. So you have to cancel it to then go back to your application. Your application pauses. It clearly, the phone's starting to understand the user priorities a lot better. It's good. It's good.
Good deal. Anybody else? Chris, have you even got an iPhone? I don't even know what kind of phone you use.
Yeah, I've got an iPhone. iPads coming out my ears.
I everything. It's I everything. Do you have iOS 5?
I don't. I know several developers, I heard through the grapevine, no one broke their NDA, just to be clear, no one broke the NDA, but I heard that it was pretty buggy, and the advice was not really, don't install it on something you use every day, and since I just have the one iPhone, because I'm a poor journalist, I decided to just wait.
Wait it out. Let the beta go away.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, I know you've got an iPhone. I'll take all the
heat. Yeah, I've also got an eye infection.
Is that the new virus for Mac?
Exactly. Yeah, it's malware.
Did you take the plunge, Alex?
Well, iOS 5, no. I prefer to let people break things before I get my hands on them. Especially when it comes to the phone, because when it comes to computer, I've got lots of spares of them, so I can run a computer with slightly dodgy software to, you know, have a play with it. But when it comes to things like my phone, which is like a, you know, a business tool, I prefer to let everyone else break theirs before I ever take the plunge. So thank you, Ewan.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, so Ewan's the only one I haven't, primarily because I don't have a developer's program, or I'm not involved with it. So, Ewan, so you're going to have to let everybody in on what you can and cannot say.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to say anything, to be honest, under the NDA, but when do I care? You know, they're only going to throw me out. So. They're not going to sue
me.
It's
only $99.
Exactly. I mean, no, I think the... there's a lot of stuff that's gone in IS5 that I think people are going to really, really like. And I'm only saying things that are actually repeated from Apple there. The key thing that we want to talk about, though, I think, is the zoom and,
right, the camera. The overall camera functions, yeah.
And the user's ability to start thinking about picking the exposures and picking the focal points in the images. And that's where it all really stems from. The zoom isn't bad. If you're talking about just taking a picture and then zooming on the full zoom right the way up to where it is, then it's got, it would be very passable up to kind of about 6x4 in terms of image size or something for the web. But after that, the thing that really bothered me was I was thinking, well, it's can't be optical zoom because they can't do anything with the lens. So this has got to be digital zoom. And how are they doing the digital? Is it interpolating? And it is interpolating pretty well. It's interpolating as well as Photoshop is doing. But the problem that you've got is what you start with is not good enough quality. I mean, I've sent images to all of you guys that I've taken so that you can have a look in comparison. So tell me what you think.
Well, I sort of ripped to bits the pictures you took, Ewan, and I found that the greatest problem there is the original picture. The original picture had far too little information for even genuine fractals, which, you know, is, you know, the standard industry standard piece of software. Even that couldn't conjure up anything. It looked like a painted effect almost. It looked so, you know, there was so little information in it once it was the zoomed image that it was like a painted effect. And like you say, 6x4 you might get away with, or put it on Twitter or Facebook, you could get away with it. But for any, you know, you couldn't print a 10x8 on a zoomed up image. It would look appalling. But I did have the theory because I looked at them when you emailed me and looked at them on the Mac, and I thought, you know, they're pretty terrible. But then I looked at them on the iPhone 4 screen, e.g. the screen that comes with the camera that you took it with, and they looked surprisingly better. I mean, I know it's a smaller screen, but it's a very sharp screen with quite a lot of contrast.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of compression there back to the original sizing. So it's, and you've got the resolution as well. So it's going to come up.
Right.
The resolution still isn't what your monitor resolution is going to be. So
exactly.
It's not going to
come. But the point I'm trying to make is if you take something on your iPhone 4 at full zoom and you only intend to look back at it on your iPhone 4 at full zoom, it's completely acceptable.
Very passable.
Well, and,
well, it's funny
and
you say,
a, I mean, the reason ahead, is, even on my MacBook Air, I've got like a maybe 126 pixels per inch on the screen. But on the iPhone 4, you're looking at, effectively 300 pixels per inch. So, you sort of get that effect that compressing those pixels down smaller makes those.
Errors.
Imperfections. Errors, imperfections, whatever. It just, you're not going to notice them as much.
Yeah. I come under the impression, though, anything looks better on a smaller screen, though. I mean, even HD, if it's not even full HD, looks better on a smaller screen.
Yeah, well, the thing you've got to remember as a photographer, you, going back to print days, that the thing was always to keep as big as possible up until you were ready to display. So, you know, your original was as big as possible, your display was as small as possible. And the contrast between the two sizes was the thing that gave you the clarity and the sharpness of the image in the final print versions.
The thing I will say about it, though, Ewan, looking at your images, though, between like the zoom and then you've done a upscale in Photoshop of that, of taking, I guess, the original photo, correct? And then you've just zoomed in to the same spot.
What I wanted to see, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I feel that the zoom on the iPhone actually looks better than the upscale, personally.
It does. That's exactly right. It definitely does. But if you look at it carefully, it actually does better with the colors than it actually does in terms of the zoom. So in terms of imperfections of the outlines of images and that kind of stuff, it's just as bad. The reason it looks better is that the exposure balance is far better, because don't forget as well that the large image is exposing for the overall color saturation and exposure, whereas the zoomed in image is only looking for the color and saturation of that local area where you've zoomed into. So it will do a better job on exposure anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was wondering whether it was going to do that. Because being digital zoom, I didn't know whether it was going to ignore everything outside the digital zoom bracket or just do exactly the same exposure. Because I was, you know, I was going to ask you, did you try it in a light to dark environment to see if the exposure changed as you zoomed in, as it would do with a, you know, with a proper zoom?
Yeah, I've done it in the office here. I've shot in just natural daylight in the office with all the lights off. Shot a bottle of Volvic with a pen stand behind it. And it does a very good job of looking at exposure and autofocus lock between the two.
Okay, I was just wondering whether it would re-expose for the digital zoom, and the answer is yes.
It does.
Which is a plus point, definitely.
Definitely.
Chris, anything you want to chime in on? I mean, obviously, you're looking at the image from a photographer's point of view. I mean, is it getting better, or are we seeing actually a little of a degrade here?
Well, I have to be honest. I would say 99% of the pictures I've shot this year with my iPhone 4. So I'm quite accustomed to using the iPhone 4 as a camera. And I avoid the zoom whenever possible. But you know, like Alex and Ewan said, it does a decent job. I mean,
yeah, you're shoving up some family
stuff. In a pinch, does a decent job.
Shoving up some family stuff for a night out, like Alex says, Facebook, that kind of stuff. And you got to bear in mind that Apple stood up straight away and said, iPhone is the second largest camera for submission to Flickr, so we're, you know, they're clearly aiming at the Flickr market. I think that was the thing with the Apple presentation. I think they laid out their stock before they even started. You know, most of what we sell is laptops, so they were going to start talking about user trackpad more than anything else. Hence, Lion has moved towards trackpad, because there's their big market. It's laptops, netbooks. Same thing with the iPhone camera.
We're seeing this iOS 5. We're probably going to get a new iPhone. I mean, this is kind of on a speculation point, but I've got to direct it towards you, Ewan, because you're the one actually playing with iOS 5 right now. Do we see changes within the software that's going to lead us to believe a better camera is actually coming?
Well, I think that's the key part of this, is that you've got great functionality and you're using that great functionality change in an old hardware effectively. So, yeah, everyone's talking autumn. There's going to be an iPhone to go along with iOS 5, keep the 5 with the 5. Right. If they're starting to come out with an 8-megapixel camera that's got a significantly better way of interpolating the data, then, yeah, you could see an awful lot better in the zoom. I personally wouldn't hold my breath, though. I think what you're going to see is that it will interpolate about as well as Photoshop, and that's it.
Interesting, because yeah. Before I get over to you, Alex, I was going to say, because I've noticed when you tweeted out on Twitter, you seem pretty happy at first, but that newness, sticky, warm feeling seems to be, I'm getting the impression, is wearing off.
No, I mean, when I tweeted it out, I said, you know, first impressions are good, but I need to shove it in CS5 to look at it in more detail. And like you said, you know, I was looking at it on the iPhone screen, and Alex is exactly right. If you're going to take the picture, look at it on the screen, dump it out to a form factor that's small like Facebook, you're going to be very happy.
Go ahead, Alex. Sorry, I trampled.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, because I don't know the answer. Do you know what the multiplier on the digital zoom is?
Well, you can see the amount that it's zoomed in on that image, but the key factor you've got there, I think, and I'm guessing at the figures here because I can't find anything in the EXIF data to deal with it, I reckon you're probably about 24 millimetres on the focal length for the zoomed out image. So I think you're probably going up to about 90.
I calculated it at 28 when it came out.
Okay, yeah.
So it's 28 to 90, so that's only about 3 times, is it? I can't remember what it is now.
Good enough.
Yeah, I mean, what is that called? That's not bad.
What is that called, Alex, you were asking?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know when you buy a lot of cameras these days, it will say 20 times zoom or whatever it is. Like, it'll give you a multiplier as opposed to a 28 to 90, which you'd do on a proper zoom lens. So I was just wondering what the equivalent was. Are they saying it's a 3x zoom or a 4x zoom?
I think it's 5x as a maximum.
So if I still think, you know, technology wise, I mean, the iPhone might only be an inch, half an inch deep or something, but I think there must be something you could do if you could set the actual sensor at the back of the camera and have the glass at the front of the camera. I really do think there would be some level of being able to do proper zooming, you know, hardware zooming, within that distance. Even if it was I think you were saying you had on one of your Lumix, it had sort of hardware flick down things that came in front of the lens to, you know, filters, etc. Would it not be an idea, if they can't do it, why can't they just have a flick round piece of glass that they do a 4x zoom or something?
Well, you can buy hardware zoom. Yeah, you can buy optical zooms that clip on. You get a case that's got...
Yeah, but why can't they fit the thing in? That's my point.
I think if you've got one of those cases, I think the danger was when you saw the zoom kind of prefaced by Dan Forstall at the keynote, you were looking at it thinking, oh, blimey, you know, all of those big optical zoom lenses that are on the front of cases are now obsolete. I think what this will actually do is bring them into their own, because what you've got then is the optical zoom that these cases bring, and you've got that little bit of flexibility with the digital zoom just to tweak it a shade more and get a little bit more out of it without going into the full grainy crap that you're going to see if you don't change from where it currently is.
Yeah, no, I agree. But if you can imagine, I don't know if you remember, you had kids' toys and you had little lenses that used to flick around in circles. Now, if they had these lenses actually on the inside of the camera, so you had say four of them, and you had one, you had normal zoom, you had 2, 4, and 8x zoom, you could do that with a piece of glass that was actually inside the camera. And then you would have a far better zooming system than that's on there now with a digital zoom.
I think the limitation here is just the physical distance between the lens and the sensor. You know, like popping in a bit of lens right in front would work well, like for a wide angle adapter or a macro adapter. But I mean, with telephoto, you're just, length matters. With telephoto, and I mean,
yeah, but you can also do it with a magnifying.
I'm sure you guys have some long glass. You know how long it. I mean, it's
I don't think it's beyond the geniosity of somebody.
No, I mean, if you're talking about could they get some extra glass in there? Yeah, there's a bit of width. They could possibly get a smaller piece of, you know, another tiny piece of glass in. But I think what you've got to look at is the Apple mantra of what they're trying to achieve. And I think, you know, they're going to say, hang on, it's not a camera. It's a phone with a camera. Well, actually, it's not a phone. It's a camera with a phone. Well, okay, actually, no, it's an internet device with a camera with a phone that's not a phone. I think, you know, the thing that the iPhone is becoming is not a phone, not a camera, not an internet device, it's an everything device. And they're never going to enhance any of those single features to be streak hot at the expense of the form factor. They're always going to give you a passable compromise to make sure that they get the form factor with the iPhone name on it, with a functioning device that will just do.
It's actually your personal computer.
No, it's not. That's the point. It's not anything. It's an everything device that doesn't do anything particularly well. It does everything quite badly. But it does it a lot. It does it a lot less badly than everything else that's on the market.
I mean, I disagree. I think as a fixed focal length compact camera, the iPhone 4 is pretty nice.
It's not bad. It's not bad. But there's better out there as compact cameras, because it's not a compact camera.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, but what
the
I'm
same?
Saying
it's not a phone, because there's better phones out there. The same as it's not a web device, because there's better web devices out there. It's just it's better than everyone else who's trying to give you an everything device as well as.
Yeah, I'd sort of beg to differ on part of that. You're completely right, but we're on a photo show, and I would say. Okay, quick question.
Regardless of the sensibility of the question, you want the equivalent of a Nikon D7000 with a 500mm lens.
What you're saying. It's probably the equivalent of some of those Nokia cameras that they put in their phones.
Mm.
I mean, that's what I want. See, the thing is, I'm coming to this on this.
But you've seen how big the N8 is, right?
Exactly.
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 But I mean, that's where we got. If you're going to carry, if as a photographer, right? This is the point I'm trying to make. As a photographer, if you want to carry around a spare pocket usable camera and not have to carry a phone at the time, don't buy an iPhone. Go and buy a Nokia. That's the point I'm trying to make.
But having said that, if you want a decent phone, don't buy a Nokia. But having said that, if you want to buy a decent phone, don't buy an iPhone either. Yeah,
if you that's want to make a phone call, don't
this buy thing
iPhone.
Is just designed to do everything less worse than everything else. There you go.
Now that's something about us as consumers, though. If we accept that as the that's the best we've got, so we'll put up with it.
Well, that's what we do. Bah.
What?
Bah, I was just being a sheep, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, well, Alec, your point.
I still feel that it's the iPhone 4 is still probably the best camera phone that we actually have on the market right now. And, you know, Alex, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I used to have a Nokia, you know, I think it was in 98. I don't remember what it was called now.
I had a Nokia, who cares?
Yeah, I
have Nokia, still got an N95, now, which is probably 5 or 6 years old, and it's still a better camera than this iPhone.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I would beg to differ to that. I mean, I thought the N95 took great pictures, to be honest. Mm. But when you get the iPhone 4, I find the colors more brilliant on there, a lot better. Yes, you need a little bit more light, possibly, with the iPhone 4 camera. But I find the pictures a lot better. And I mean, from an Apple point of view, we're never gonna get an iPhone that's going to look like a Nokia, because Apple's design department would never allow it. And Steve Jobs would literally kill the design staff for doing something that way. I agree with you to a point, Alex, where I think we could probably find a way to get that lens in the camera there to have it go deeper by eliminating the front-facing camera, just having one lens. There's your FaceTime, and then there's your camera, too. But I think we're in a time now where we like the FaceTime, and then we can swing it around. I don't know if we're ever going to see that.
Well, what I'd say is if Steve is listening, if he wants to absolutely corner the world with no competition whatsoever, put a proper zoom in this camera, and that'll be the end of all the other manufacturers overnight.
Yeah, we shall see. iOS 5 does definitely look interesting, but I'm going to stick with Chris on this, and I'm still not going to use my Zoom in the upcoming firmware. Let's move on now to an actual real camera, or if you can call it that, the Pentax OGPS 1.
OMG 1.
Well, you got to look at $250 for this thing. It's $250 for this thing. I don't think we've ever had much to say great about Pentax, so I don't ever look for them to be a sponsor on the show, but it doesn't look that bad for $250, £229 in pounds. Chris, how's this rubbing against you?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest. I mean, I was a longtime Pentax user for years and years.
Is that the camera you started out with?
Oh, yeah. K1000. I ended up having 3 of those at one point, and then I got the collector's bug, and I had probably about 25 different Pentax cameras. But I had a PZ1 was my main shooter. I had a black MX was my backup for that. I had a 645N, which was the autofocus 645 field camera they make.
I don't know, SF7.
Yeah, I mean, they don't, what they make isn't crap, but when the digital, when it really switched over and people were using digital mainly, I mean, you know, Pentax and Minolta, even Olympus to a certain degree, like they started out real strong in compacts and just kind of lost their way for a while. So, you know, Nikon and Canon just kind of took over that market for the most part. But what Pentax makes isn't bad by any stretch. They make some good stuff. But it doesn't. I mean, they kind of focus on certain niches, which I think they kind of always have. You know, Canon and Nikon have always kind of had a large part of the market, and Pentax always sort of focused on, you know, they were really focused on making things really compact and really easy to use. And I still see that in their cameras now. So I don't think what they make is crap, but I just don't think it appeals to, you know, I don't think it appeals to a wide range of especially pros and, as you know, Canon and Nikon stuff does.
I'm interested here, Chris, as to your perception of this, because the one thing that I always found with the Pentaxes was because the bayonet fitting was a lot narrower than Canon's was, the lenses tend to be a lot slimmer, and I always found them more pleasing to use with the smaller camera body. There, there was just a, it was, you know, you're talking millimeters here, so I could well admit I'm being stupid, but you know, the smaller bayonet fitting gave for smaller lenses, and the smaller lenses just handled easier than the fractionally bigger Canon lenses.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I even just looking at the 50mm lenses were so much smaller than the Canon ones, even though they were, you know, spec for spec 50mm 1.8 lenses. You know, the Pentax lens would be like about half the size. And it just felt different. It felt, you know, I have tiny hands, so for what that's worth.
You know, to me, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking this is the camera for me. I'm not sure about the brand, because all I keep hearing from Chris is, well, it's not crap. Not great, not crap. So I don't know if that's really a great slogan. Hey, we're not crap.
I don't mean to say it's just not bad. I mean, they make great stuff. I just don't think that in general. I don't think that their cameras have the as wide an appeal as what Canon and Nikon offer. And generally speaking,
I think it's a hobby.
You know, I think they sort of focus on a certain customer. Two things that Pentax really focuses on is compactness and ease of use. So like the control layouts and everything, especially on the lower end cameras are like really easy to use. And I remember, I want to say maybe 5 years ago or so, I'd taken a look at some of the Pentax DSLRs at the time, and they were inexpensive. The image quality, at the time, they were using, I think they still use Sony CCDs back then. So the image quality wasn't quite matching what the Canon CMOS sensors were at the time. So this is, you know, 5 years ago. It's a little bit of a vague recollection, but I remember remarking both how small and compact the camera was, but how comfortable the controls were to use. Even coming from, you know, like being very comfortable with the Canon controls, but they were just so, like, the way they were laid out and spaced, even the feel of the buttons, everything, it made it very inviting and easy to use.
You had a point to make a second ago.
I think that this is going to be a good hobbyist camera, and if you came to me and said, I'm having to think about buying this, what do you think, Ewan, for $249, I'd say buy it, Carl. You'll be very happy.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. I've got it isn't crap from Chris. I've got you and tell me to buy it. What are you going to tell me, Alex?
Are we talking about a Pentax OG PS1?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Okay, just checking, because it's not a camera.
It's not a camera.
No, the GPS-1 is the bit that goes on the top, but the camera
comes along with it. Okay, as long as we're talking about the same thing. Okay, I'd sit there being very quiet. As per the GPS unit, if you've already got one of these cameras and you want to be really lazy and geotag everything you've shot with, you know, just not have a pen and paper with you or have a memory, then it seems a cheaper alternative to than buying the Nikon or Canon version. But as per Pentax cameras, I mean, what you've got to remember is in the old days when people use film, other than the you know, the quality of the lens, which obviously was quite important, if you think of the film as in that's your sensor, well, you could put in rubbish film or good film, or have a good day with your film or a bad day with your film, and it was like putting in a new sensor to your camera. So it wasn't as fixed as it is now. You could buy an expensive film and you'd get a better picture than if you bought a rubbish film. So Pentax were a lot, you know, the market was a lot easier then. Anyone that had a half-decent body and a half-decent lens with a good piece of film, you're going to be fine. The trouble is nowadays, you don't have that flexibility. Everything is built in into one go. There's nothing you can change. If you want to buy a Pentax, you either buy a Pentax lens. I don't even know if Sigmas and Tamrons and people make lenses for Pentax.
Yeah,
you're basically stuck. The whole package is all you're going to get. You're never going to be able to make it any better or worse by changing anything. So I would say Pentax, I've got no problem with Pentax. I've used Pentax in the past. I've used Olympus in the past. I've used a few makes in the past. What I would say, though, is if you're stuck with an overall package, buy Nikon or Canon at a push Sony, because you are going to be able to improve it and change it. You're going to be able to use the lenses on a newer model. You know, when this Pentax becomes obsolete, you're only going to be able to buy another Pentax, and that's the end of it. You know, but if you buy a Nikon, there's 10 other Nikons you might be able to buy and change and put a new lens, put the old lens on. So that's the only reason I'd say steer away from these things. There's nothing wrong with them, but you are limiting yourself in the future, and you're also limiting yourself in the secondhand market. I've got quite a few, and I know Ewan's got quite a few Canon lenses. Secondhand lenses, they're a lot more readily available if you go for one of the bigger manufacturers.
Yep,
I know exactly what I'm going to do now. I'm just going to get myself a damn Panasonic Lumix and call it good.
Well, your iPhone 4.
I'll tell you what I thought was the real, I guess, the amazing wow feature of this GPS unit is the two of the higher end Pentax DSLRs have the sensors mounted on a you know, where it's like a sensor based anti-shake system, and so, you know, instead of the Canon and Nikon systems where they're built into the lens, Pentax built it in, so the sensor adjusts up and down, left and right, to compensate for shake. So, you know, there's kind of the benefit that it works with any lens. The downside is it's not as, you know, optimized for each different lens. But one thing that's really interesting is this GPS unit will tie into that system. And when you're doing astrophotography, it'll actually make the sensor adjust to the path of stars as they move across the sky. And it'll automatically calculate that path based on your GPS coordinates.
Oh, that is very clever.
See, that's the problem. I mean, that's where GPS really comes into its own.
That's really cool if you do astrophotography and you've got, you know.
That's always been available on tripod heads, though, hasn't it? Tracking GPS tripod heads for astrophotography. The only other thing I'd say, just, again, to be contradictory, because that's what I do, having it built into the camera, the anti-shake, if you look at, I mean, someone brought me a Canon the other day to play with, I've got to admit it. You know, I'm going to have to go to Canon Anonymous, but I've got to admit I did use one. And he gave me an old lens with, I don't know what you call it. I call it vibration reduction. It's called image stabilization.
IS.
And he then gave me another one with IS2, which is their newer version. And the second one was significantly better. So all I'd say is if you have the image stabilization on the lens, it's always upgradable. Whereas if you have it on the camera, that's it. You're never going to get a better stabilization than what you've got built in.
Unless you buy another body.
Okay,
yeah, but then, you know, you're more likely to have more lenses than bodies.
Well, that's a crap argument, though, Alex.
And 48 bodies.
That's a crap argument, because you're saying the same thing with the lens. If I buy, and I'm not going to get better image stabilization unless I buy another lens. And actually, you know, in a lot of cases, you would get to the point where, say, you bought a 450D, you've spent £600 on it, but you've gone and bought yourself a £1,700 lens that's got IS on it. Then the greater expense is the lens by significant values, especially if you talk about multiple lenses.
One lens, that's the point. You have more than one option.
Yeah, but that's the point. Is that if you're saying it's on the camera, well, at the moment, my 1DS Mark II is the most expensive single piece of kit that I've got. But when you look at the fact that I've actually got a stable of lenses that I can't change away from because I'm Canon, actually buying a new body is the cheaper option than replacing all the lenses to get the second grade IS.
Yeah,
I
understand your point.
Got you there, dude.
Yeah, the converse to your argument is that if you wanted to upgrade the image stabilization on all your lenses, if you have a Pentax, would be to get a new Pentax body.
Alternatively, practice holding it stiller.
Yeah,
saying all that,
cheapest,
I don't use
the cheapest thing.
See, I don't use it because I don't find it sharp enough.
Well, the IS tracking that I've got on my 200mm lens is perfect. Absolutely perfect. Yeah, I can't see it get any better than it.
All I know now is I'm completely and utterly confused, and I'm not going to get a Pentax. Not today. I am going to move on to the questions, though, because we need to do that, guys. Shall we do it now?
Yep.
All right, let's get into it as soon as I can find them. First question comes from Gary. He says, "Hi, fellas. Inspired by your call to do more with manual settings on my camera and knowing that Ewan's backup camera is the same as mine, which is a 450D, I have started playing with aperture and shutter speeds. I have a few articles and online tutorials, and I can understand that if the aperture is closed, the shutter speed needs to be slower, and that if the aperture is open, then the shutter speed can be faster. But this is where I get confused. Both of these will Classic. Give me a perfectly exposed image. Why would I then choose one setting over the other? Please help me if you can and try to keep it simple. I'm still in my first month as a manual photographer, and I know ISO also plays a part in this process, but maybe you can cover that another week." Who wants to start?
I'd like to jump in here, being a photography instructor. Maybe I can jump in here with a simple explanation. What you get into is that your aperture affects one quality of the image and the shutter speed affects another. The aperture will affect your depth of field. So it sort of affects the range of objects that are in focus, depending on their distance from the camera. The shutter speed, though, will affect sort of the impression of time or motion. So if you have a faster shutter speed, you can freeze fast motion. If you have a longer shutter speed, it's going to kind of enhance that perception of motion or the perception of time passing. Is that simple?
It. Yeah, that's it.
Very good. There is one more, just to complicate the issue, there's only one more fact. In my photography, I have control over the amount of light as well. And mm-hmm. the only thing I would say there, depending what lens I use, I will set the aperture on the lens to what I deem as the sharpest point of that lens. The different lenses have different sharpest points. And I shoot flat images normally. So what I will do is I will set the aperture to the sharpest point of the lens, and then I will calculate the speed accordingly. And if I have to, I'll adjust the light values as well. But there is, you know, just to complicate the issue, but there is a sharpest point of the lens at a certain aperture as well. So if you've got control of every variable, I tend to use that.
Yeah. Ultimately, it kind of comes down when you're choosing aperture or shutter speed. When I teach classes, I show a whole chart where there's like 12 different exposures. Combinations of shutter speed and aperture give you the same, you know, amount of exposure, but each one will give you a slightly different image. And it's just sort of a matter of deciding when you're taking the picture, what's more important. Is it that, you know, the depth of field is more important to what I'm working on? Is it the impression of motion that's more important, or do I need some kind of compromise between those two?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's not Chris, a scientific answer per se. It's always a matter of, you know, when you're there in the moment and you're thinking, what's more important to me right now?
Yeah. Could I ask Chris a slightly technical addendum to this question?
Sure.
As a teacher, I find on film, it's all about aperture. It's all about sharpness. But on digital, I find that if I pick the right aperture, I get less aberrations. It's all to do with the lenses. But I find if I pick about an F11 or F13... I get less fringing and less things like that. Is it my imagination or not?
No, it goes back to, and I'm not even sure who said this earlier, but that there's kind of an optimized aperture for each lens.
Oh, that was me.
Yeah. Okay. So it gets into how light diffracts around the aperture, and so light passes through the lenses and it's going to spread different frequencies, and that's what causes those fringing. It's called chromatic aberration.
Yeah.
And, you know, then once it passes through the aperture, then it's going to diffract again. And, you know, essentially at that aperture where you get the sharpest performance of the lens, usually also decreases those chromatic aberrations the most.
Good. I mean, it was just something I brought from film into digital, and I just assumed that I was doing the right thing, and I'm glad to say I probably am. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, he'll send you the bill, Alex. Anything to add, Ewan, before I get into the second question?
I can drive me car at 20 miles an hour in first gear, or I can drive me car at 20 miles an hour in third gear. Both have merits at certain points, but along the flat and straight, there's going to be a price to pay for each of those extremes. Now, if you throw in a big hill, I'm going to choose the first gear over the third gear. If you're choosing a big slope that goes the opposite way, so I'm not climbing, I'm descending, then I'm going to choose third gear over first gear. All you've got to do is take your camera out, set up a scenario, and go from one extreme to the other, and as they cross paths, see what results you get. And you'll learn more from doing that than listening to online blogs and that kind of crap. What Chris has said there right at the start is the fundamentals of the issue. You pay for depth of field, and then you pay for noise as well at the other end. And go and play, Gary. That's the key part.
Yeah. You know, when I teach, that's like one of the early assignments is to basically set up a shot and just, you know, match the exposure and shoot like 8 to 12 different pictures, you know, matching the exposure, but adjusting the shutter speed and aperture as you go along. And then we just put the pictures on a projector and we all talk about them. And that's exactly right.
That's what you got to do. You really just got to get in there, and you got to go out, and it's like anything you want to get better at it, practice makes perfect.
I did that with film. Cost me a frigging fortune.
you're still paying off the loan, aren't you?
Don't get me
it's
started.
It's free.
Move
digital,
on.
It's free.
You try testing it on 10.8.
Next question, guys, comes from Fred in Florida. He says, "Hi, gents. Thanks for the show. He's learned so much in the recent weeks." He says he has a question. Good. This is the place for it. "I have a monitor and a photo printer. It's a BenQ monitor and a Canon printer. I get the prints from the printer to look like the pictures when they are on the screen in Photoshop Essentials."
Can't.
Sorry. I can't get the points of the printer to look the...
changes the whole question.
I was wondering what you wanted to know.
He wants to know any tips or advice, please. The pictures tend to come out dark, by the way. Change the ink?
Turn the monitor brightness down.
No, this is a calibration issue. So
yeah,
I'm sorry,
exactly, yeah.
You're going to have to go out and buy another piece of equipment here, Fred. Go and get yourself a calibrator, cheapest you can possibly manage. They do a just fine job at the very low end. Don't think about buying something that's extremely expensive. Calibrate your monitor and then see if you can get yourself a printer calibrator or if there's print calibration software. Now, I think Canon do calibration software for all their printers, but I don't know that. So go and see what they've got. But you should be able to calibrate by your printer by settings that are in the software.
Well, even if you got an inexpensive monitor-only calibrator, that's going to make a big
huge
difference, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I send something to people, I always say, please. I quite often get a phone call if I've shot it on digital and they say the color's not quite right. And I say, can you please take it to somebody with a proper monitor? And then if it needs correcting, I'll correct it. But, you know, it's
and then they come round and pee through your letterbox afterwards.
Say it again, I didn't
know. And then they come round and pee through your letterbox afterwards.
Yeah. No, I mean, 99 times out of 100, I get a phone call saying, oh, yeah, no, you're right, sorry. But the first call I always get when it's a new customer is, the colours don't look quite right on my screen.
And I'm like, Alex G. Yeah. Fox.
And it's the Alex deep G. breath, Fox. Same conversation. Here we go again.
Alex G. Fox, Advanced Customer Relations.
That's right. Alex G. Fox, get yourself a better monitor.
Well, have you had your eyes checked recently?
The only other thing I'd say, there are various settings on when you say, I'm sure Elements, I think he was using Elements quickly. Yeah. Yeah, Essentials.
Photoshop Essentials, yeah.
Now, there are settings that you can change, which your Essentials or Elements or anyone like that, any software like that, should have a color space for your printer. And so, therefore, if you might have to play with the settings, but if you make sure that your piece of software knows what your screen color space is, the color space you're working in and the color space of your printer, then let that have a go at correcting it rather than you trying to play with it yourself. You might find that's all you need to do. Because sometimes your software doesn't know what printer it's trying to mix the colors for. So it's something you need to do. And quite often the actual printer software has it as well. It's I can't remember the options, but it's, you know, use color sync or color match or use this color space or that color space. I can't exactly remember what the settings you need are, but you can get it to have a really good guess on its own. You might not have it set up correctly.
That could be any of those things. Fred, try the cheap one and move up to the least expensive one, which is a monitor calibrator. I think that's actually, it's probably ultimately in the end, if you're doing photography, I think all of you guys would agree with me that eventually, if you're getting really serious about it, you need a monitor calibrator. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's a start point.
Yeah.
Well, so. And I was joking earlier, but really most people have their brightness on their monitors cranked like to a point that is so unnatural that a print is never going to come close.
That's right. Semi-pros love high contrast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, by default, I think the brightness will be really bright and the contrast will be cranked, and you're just never going to get a print that matches that. I keep my monitor down pretty low, and the calibrators and the software will tell you, like, they'll be like, okay, turn down the brightness a little bit. This is way too bright.
We've done. Fred's got a lot of options there, and I think you'll be able to. I think you'll be able to find one there for sure. If not, write us back, Fred. Last question comes from Vince in Atlanta. He says, "Dear Photo Guys," I kind of like that. "I have a Photoshop Elements 9, and I'll always have to straighten. I said that again, didn't I? I said strengthen. I said that during the show. Straighten the image by eye. Is there any way, or is there any better way, chaps? Is there any better way? Ewan, is there any better way? You do a lot of stuff with Photoshop.
Best is there a measure tool in Elements?
Tool, yeah. I think if you go behind certainly in CS5, if you go behind the eyedropper tool, you'll find the ruler tool. And the ruler tool is perfect for straightening what you see as levels. Don't rely on it absolutely, because your eye is probably a better correction in a lot of cases. But if you've got things like water, or brick line, fence lines, those are all built with spirit levels, so they are level before you start, and water is always level. So go and get the ruler tool, draw out a line across the level of the water, and then go into image rotation, arbitrary rotation, and it's already calculated the angle for you. Just click OK and it'll straighten your image. Now you'll have little white bits around the outside edge, but you just have to duplicate and drag out the image so that it fills the screen again. That's it. Done.
Or crop. You could crop.
Or crop. Take it down, yeah.
Crop. Anything to add, Alex?
No. That's good.
Okay. Simple. Yeah,
okay. That's good. That'll right, do.
Good. If you guys, as you can see, we will spend sometimes a lot of time on your questions, but it's simple to do. BageltechPhoto@gmail.com. Just go ahead and send them on in here every week. We'll get to about three of your questions. And if you don't hear it this week, you'll hear it next week or possibly the week next. We get a lot of them, but please keep them coming in because we'd love to answer all of your questions. Also, I want to point out the Flickr photo group that we have. Flickr.com/group/BageltechPhoto. It doesn't matter what you got. If you got an iPhone, if you got a Pentax, all you have is the GPS, and like I screwed up the article a while ago. But if you got a camera and you want to stick it on the web, we'd love to have you as a member. We're getting a lot of members right now. Share your work. That's what we're here for, and we learn off one another. I mean, I shoot on the iPhone 4 all the time on the thing. It's my favorite camera. Really, it's my only camera. And we encourage you to do it. Get out, take some pictures, and join our group, Bagel Tech Photo Flickr group, flickr.com/groups/BagelTechPhoto. Before we head out for this week, we got to mention UK2.net, our lifeline, our everything. Really here at the Bagel Tech Network. It is really the reason why you can continue to enjoy the show each and every week for free. They provide all of our web hosting, all of our bandwidth, our lives would be lost without them, with a huge mortgage payment. They got some great deals. Ewan, usually know what's going on, so I'll refer to you about their greatest and latest deals that they're doing with Bagel Tech.
Yeah, the UK2 have got 15% off for all BagelTech listeners now on every service that they do. So anything that you buy, when you've bought it, go to the checkout point and type in BagelTech as your offer code, and you'll get 15% off everything that you purchase. Doesn't matter if it's domain names, co-location services, VPS servers, everything you possibly want. Go to BagelTechNews.com, the home website. Scroll down, you'll find a tracking link there. Even if you just want to sign into UK2 account, please go to our website and click on that. They'll know that we sent you and you're a returning customer from BagelTech, and just buy what you want to buy or sign into your stuff, and they'll know that you've come to them through us.
That's right. And most importantly, if you just want to go check them out, BagelTechNews.com, click the click through. That keeps us on the air, so please do it. And before we wrap up the show this week, before we can let everybody know where we get a hold of you guys, please, reviews, we really need them in iTunes, in the iTunes store. Let us know what you think of all the shows on the BagelTech Network. Reviews really help us. It helps us with rankings in iTunes, and it gets the word out more. If you like the show, if you want to see improvements to the show, let us know. Leave a review at iTunes for the Photo Show, Mac Show, the Daily Show, whatever it is, whatever show that you want to really leave a review for, please do it over at iTunes. We really, really appreciate it. Now we're at the time of the show where we can let you know to get a hold of all these fine photographers that join us each week. Chris, where can the fine folks get a hold of you?
I'm on OKCupid.
Long white John.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Do you have Twitter, too? I'm a contributing writer for Ars Technica, so you can find most of my work online at arstechnica.com. And, of course, I'm always connected to Twitter via my iPhone, at Foresmac, Foresmac.
Simple as that. And you do a lot of tweeting out of photography tips and things I've noticed on there. I follow you, and I've learned a few things here and there. And then it all went quiet.
Yeah, that's good.
I was agreeing with you.
Ewan, I was just going to say, Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography work and that kind of stuff. Or you can follow me on Twitter on the at BagelTech News account or at Ewan Rankin.
And I'll say it correctly this time. Last, but certainly not least, Alex, where can people get all of you?
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at AlexGFox. And coming to a royal collection near you very shortly. There you go. Can't say much more. They'll put me in the tower.
The accumulated wealth of eons.
Very well. Yeah. He's got little contracts that he can't let know about either there, Ewan.
No,
just like your iOS 5 thing. Please join us next week. We hope we haven't scared you off. We'll be back with more great photo news, photo tips, everything photo. We'll be coming at you next week right here on Bagel Tech Photo. Thank you for tuning in.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.